The marketplace lead is where the U.S. and the world stand today with the steel tariff story. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A 25% tax on imported steel from anywhere, 10% on aluminum. President Trump says the U.S. steel industry has been, quote, ravaged by aggressive foreign trade practices. Now, most economists say this could hurt the jobs of Americans outside the steel industry, consumers, and U.S. corporate profits. Let's connect to our partner newsroom in London, where we find the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
Help me with a tariff update for this Monday morning. There was a meeting in Brussels over the weekend?
There was indeed, and it was pretty inconclusive, it has to be said. The trade representative, Robert Lighthizer, met his opposite numbers from the European Union and also from Japan. Both those, I think, were interested in two things: to see the tariffs not go ahead at all. But if they are going to go ahead, I think they'd both welcome an exemption for their own steel industries. There are exemptions for Canada and Mexico, but neither the EU nor Japan have got any clear indication from Mr. Lighthizer that they are going to join that list.
And, you know, we're watching China. The commerce minister there said the government was prepared to perhaps retaliate, but didn't really embrace the notion of trade war, per se.
He did say that there are no winners in a trade war, and I'm quoting him here, it will only bring disaster to China, the United States, and the world. China does not want a trade war. The implication clearly being there, I think, that if somebody else were to instigate it, that China would be prepared to respond pretty vigorously.
All right. On the trade beat this morning, the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
The U.S. dollar is down to the euro, 1.23, down to the yuan, 6.33. Other numbers, the FTSE in London is little changed. Dow and S&P futures are up in the 0.4% range. The biggest initial public offering of stock has reportedly been put off until next year. The Financial Times says the huge oil company Saudi Aramco has communicated this time frame to British officials. Saudi Arabia is trying to get about $2 trillion for its crown jewel, and that's been a struggle. Ten years ago this week, it was the shotgun marriage heard round the world. March 2008, J.P. Morgan Chase bought the investment bank Bear Stearns. It was a dramatic moment in the financial crisis, not the first, but one of the biggest. The deal happened over a frenzied weekend. The week before, rumors that the firm was short on cash spooked Bear Stearns investors, sent the stock plummeting, and dried up the short-term loans that Bear needed to get through each day. With the benefit of 10 years, Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson looks back.
It's been a hard week for shares of Bear Stearns as the firm has been buffeted by constant rumors of a looming liquidity problem.
March 12, 2008, a Wednesday. Bear Stearns CEO Alan Schwartz went on CNBC to try and quash rumors that Bear was running out of money.
Our liquidity position has not changed at all. Our balance sheet has not weakened at all.
Investors weren't reassured, and rumor became reality, a run on the bank of sorts. Bear had started the week with $18 billion in cash reserves. By Thursday, it had just $2 billion left. That night, Schwartz notified the Federal Reserve it would have to file bankruptcy in the morning. Instead, the Fed arranged for an emergency loan. But by Friday evening, Fed officials told Bear executives they had to find a buyer for the firm.
Anybody involved in the financial industry will never forget the first time they heard the price for Bear Stearns.
Mike Mayo with Wells Fargo has been a bank analyst for more than 30 years. For context, just a year earlier, Bear stock had hit $170 a share. It dropped to $30 that Friday, March 14th.
And they were sold for $2 a share.
On Sunday.
Incredible.
That price was later revised to $10 a share, but still, it seemed like a bargain for J.P. Morgan, a coup for its CEO, Jamie Dimon. What's more, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York helped facilitate the deal by essentially buying billions of Bear Stearns' riskiest assets.
And the market thought for J.P. Morgan, this was a home run. It all looked fantastic.
Since a but coming here?
I do think the financial benefits were far less than we or J.P. Morgan or the market had initially expected.
In a 2015 letter to shareholders, Jamie Dimon wrote that the bank's legal costs related to mortgage-backed securities totaled some $19 billion. And 70% of that wasn't from bad acts at J.P. Morgan, but from Bear Stearns and another bank it acquired, Washington Mutual. Diamond wrote, in case you're wondering, no, we would not do something like Bear Stearns again. In fact, I don't think our board would let me take the call.
I think having pressed J.P. Morgan Chase to take over Bear Stearns, it was unfair to penalize them for the bad acts.
Congressman Barney Frank, Democrat from Massachusetts, now retired, was the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee during the crisis.
Having the federal government, frankly, press a bank to take over a failing investment house wouldn't be what you would do in an ideal situation.
But from the public's perspective, Frank thinks the deal was better than the alternatives.
Let it go bankrupt and not pay any debts and cause great reverberations of a negative sort in the system, or that the public pay the debts, which wouldn't be attractive.
The New York Fed actually made money on the Bear assets it bought, more than $700 million. But many people have criticized the government's involvement in this deal and the precedent it may have set. For Frank, Bear Stearns convinced him the government needed a better way to deal with failing institutions, an authority he actually wrote into the Dodd-Frank financial reforms that bear his name. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Our series this year is called Divided Decade, which explores how the great financial crisis and its aftermath changed us. Among the top folks at the controls when all hell broke loose 10 years ago was the Treasury Secretary, the Federal Reserve Chair, and the President of the Federal Reserve's Wall Street branch at the time. Marketplace's Kai Ryssdal is talking to those folks in the coming days. We wanted to know what you would ask them. Send us your questions. Facebook Marketplace APM, if you would. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.